Great experiences build great leaders. Great leaders build great teams. This is Building Great Sales Teams.
All right, guys, welcome back to Building Great Sales Teams. I've got my friend Mitch Smedley joining me here today, aka the Modern Plumber. He's a YouTube host, he's a podcast host, he's a small business mentor. And in addition to all that, he's the CEO of Smedley Plumbing, which he started in 2020 mid-pandemic and grew to over 1 million in sales in 18 months. And now he's got 5 trucks and 10 employees. Mitch, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome, brother. Well, this has been a long time coming. I will say that ever since I heard me and you talked and you walked me through your sales process, I was like, man, more tradespeople need to hear this, because I feel like so many of them just rely on their tech's expertise versus training them on a sales process. So why don't we start there?
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to plumbing, you've deployed a sales process that makes a lot of sense and is practical. And I feel like it's working. You're at 7 figures in sales. So yeah. Can you walk us through that?
Yeah. So we kind of broke down our entire customer experience around what does it take to make it better and what does it take to differentiate us from anybody else. And so really our sales process pretty much starts when you call in to book a service call with us. The way that we document your concerns and the way that we get that into our system, the literal words that you say get put into the system, and then our plumber is going to repeat those exact words later on in the process. And so it helps send the signal to the customer that we're listening and we're understanding you. And you don't, you know, one of the problems that you have in this industry is when a customer calls in, they feel like they have to explain the whole thing to every single person along the way. And so by documenting exactly what's wrong word for word, even though the customer is not using the correct words, we will still recite those exact words to them later on when our plumber's getting ready to head that way. And so they get on the schedule, and then our plumber will call them when we're heading that way, and they'll recite word for word what's, you know, what the customer called in about. So if the customer says the thingamabob in the toilet is making a squealy noise, our plumber will say something along those lines. They'll say, oh, looks like you're getting a squealy noise from your thingamabob in the toilet, you know, and the customer will laugh a little bit.
I'll admit I forgot about this part, and this is the genius in it right here, because, you know, I teach so much about qualifying customers before you present to them and qualifying them based on their pain points. But I never realized that some of the best salespeople will mirror the customer, and that includes their words. Okay. Yeah. So continue.
Yeah. And so that helps set us aside from other companies, just because now the customer knows we listen. They don't have to explain the whole thing all over again. Obviously they'll have some more things to explain once we get there, but they know that everything they said during their phone call to book the service call with us didn't just fall on deaf ears. And that's another unique thing that we do in our company is a lot of other companies, they kind of leave you in the dark until your service call shows up. And then the office calls you and says, you know, Doug Mitchell is getting ready to head your direction, right? And so they still, that kind of creates this weird friction at the door, because you go ring the doorbell and there's this weird get to know you phase at the front door. And so when our plumber calls to say we're heading that direction and the plumber recites the exact words to the customer, it helps build that relationship on a humorous note right from the get-go. And then the conversation usually carries on a little bit, and we, you know, tell the customer how long it's going to be before we get there. And then we show up. And that way, when the customer's answering the door, they're answering the door to a semi-familiar person. They've never seen them before, but they've talked to them. They know they have a personality and everything else. And so, and then now that we're in, you know, inside their home, you know, we have a couple of steps that we do right at the door. We, you know, make sure we greet all the animals in the home. Our slogan, if you can see it around the mic here, fix pipes, pet dogs. So, you know, we make sure that we appreciate their dog. We've at the end of the service call, we've even got like customized dog treats with our logo on them, that we give to the dogs. And
it's amazing.
We make sure that they're aware of like the community initiative programs that we do around the area and things like that. And then we start working our way through the service call. And essentially they're there, you know, we're there because they've got a broken toilet or a problem with a water heater or a faucet. And so as we're gathering and learning about what's wrong and how this impacts them, we will put together three options for them to consider. And we always try to go with three. Sometimes it's a little difficult to come up with three, and sometimes whittle it down because there are so many options. If they have like a laundry list of things to do, then we got to get creative and come up with like three different bundles, so to speak.
Yeah.
Essentially we try to give them like a Band-Aid repair option, just a bare minimum that's going to get you taken care of today. And then we do like a more inclusive option that's going to include a lot more repairs to give them a little bit more peace of mind. And then the top option is always just a complete replacement of whatever we're there for. And so that they have that as a reference. And so you look at a lot of the 5-star reviews we have, and a lot of them will specifically say the plumber gave me three options with zero pressure to buy the most expensive one. And the moment we deliver those options, the goal is to get a sale. We want to convert that person to a customer instead of a product. So the system works really well. We've got some pretty good, KPIs to reflect that as far as conversions and our average tickets and everything that goes along with those.
That's fantastic, Mitch. And when you're going through this and you're explaining it, I feel like it's a seasoned sales trainer teaching salespeople how to sell. That's what I'm hearing in the way you're going through this. And you're talking about the insights of the customer or the demeanor of the customer, and then getting to know the customer along the way. So I guess my question is, at this point, how are you teaching this to plumbers versus somebody that's coming in and open to learning on how to sell a customer? And you're not just hiring green plumbers here, you're hiring seasoned plumbers that know what they're doing.
Yeah.
How are you, I guess, what does that training process look like?
And that's part of what derived this particular sales process, is because a lot of good seasoned plumbers, you hit on something there. We only hire plumbers with 5 years of experience or more. And so a lot of good seasoned plumbers will have somewhat of an aversion to sales. They don't want to be a sales guy, right? And so we've come up with this process to really enhance the customer experience. And that's how we deliver it to the guys. We deliver the message that yes, this process does result in larger tickets and everything else, but also it results in a more pleasant experience with the customer. And if they're having a good experience, they're going to get more work from you, and they're going to give you the Google review and recommend you to their family and friends and everything else. And so in a way, it's kind of taken the sales side of things out of it. And it's more or less just a unique customer experience that results in sales. And so it really helps with those guys that are averse to selling.
So we were just at your event in Vegas for the Tradewinds group.
Yeah.
And you had me come and speak about sales in general, right? And one of the things I talked about was the selling the way customers want to buy. So the four buying personalities. And when you look at your process, it accommodates all four of those buying personalities, in particular the hardest ones to sell, which is the fighter.
Yeah.
You know, and the fighter is the hardest one to sell because most people try and tell a fighter what to buy versus giving them options like you guys are, those three options, to where it's their idea and they get to pick it out from the shelf versus being told what to do, which no fighter wants to be told what to do, you know, by. You know, and granted, a counselor understands, an entertainer understands, the detective understands the expertise of the plumber, but a fighter doesn't care. You know what I'm saying? They want to be the one in control, right?
So, and before you led that speech, I always considered the fighter the engineer. Like the engineer was the one that never wanted to be told what to do. They wanted to be in control. They wanted to, for lack of a better term, assert their intellectual knowledge on you, right? And so that again is part of what drove us to create the process like we did, was like, hey, this works for engineers too. We can We can let them play at whatever level they're comfortable with, and we're just happy to get them taken care of. So, but man, those engineers, they still run you through the ringer. They're going to take your three options and they're going to pick them apart, and they're usually going to have you repackage them, you know, like, what if we do this with this, or what if we do this with this, or, you know, they're going to examine it a little bit farther than just the surface level of the three options.
Dang it. You just called me out. I'm pretty sure I did that with the AC tech that came to my house a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Okay. So where did, you've been in business for 18 months now. I would imagine you've been plumbing for a lot longer than that, but you've been in business for 18 months. This does not sound like an 18 month old business owner.
Well, so, we've been in business 3.5 years. We were just doing $1 million years within 18 months.
Gotcha.
And so, at 18 months into business, we were completing our first full year in business, and we were clicking off $1 million years at that point. So, I was in the industry for 19 years before I started our company. And thankfully, a lot of that industry experience came at the management level. And so I was always having to manage guys and teach them not only how to do the plumbing, but also how to communicate with customers. And it's kind of crazy. Like, the customer communication piece is the hardest part. I can teach anybody how to plumb. It's not plumbing with enough time. Plumbing is not overly difficult. It's fairly black and white, pass, fail, go, no go. Like, it just works or it doesn't. Right. And you can, plumbing has, if you wanted to call it like fixed parts of it, where you can just anchor on those fixed parts and expand upon that. Whereas teaching people the customer experience, you know, customers are fluid and they throw you for curveballs, and their moods change from day to day, or from hour to hour. And so customers are in constant motion, and trying to teach somebody to pick up on where that customer is at that time can be pretty difficult.
Man. And I do not envy you teaching it to plumbers. I mean, that's just, that's the biggest part of it. But again, you said that you're coming from 19 years, you know, in the industry and then managing them. So, you know how to speak their language, and it's a great customer experience. And I know that that's very important to you. Whenever I hear you talk about that, you can tell you're passionate about it. And, it's gotta be from all that time in the industry and seeing what inspired you to go out on your own?
Really, what kept me from going out on my own for so long was I bought into all of those business owners that they reckon it seems to be that they tell this to good team members. Business owners find a really good team member, excuse me, and they start getting worried that that team member might go out on their own. And so they start, dropping little bombs here and there of like, oh man, you never want to do this. Oh, the stress is just so crazy. I just had to, put money into the company, or, I'm worried, about payroll, or they start, just dangling out those little nuggets of negativity that are like, man, that is crazy. Yeah. I'm happy to have a stable job. I'm happy to know that I'm taken care of and all this stuff. And so, it took me longer than most to realize that. Plus, there weren't a ton of resources out there to really help you get started into business. Right. And so, finally, after, the third or fourth place I worked, where the owners are all saying that, and then they get in their new Corvette and drive away, and it's like, man, I don't think it's that bad. Like, I just went to your house. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Like, your family vacations seem pretty cool. So, finally, after I think the third or fourth management job where I was really successful at it, I was just like, hey, it's time for me to do this for myself. Instead of building somebody else's legacy, it's time to start building our own. And so we just made the decision to do it, and it worked.
Now that you're in the owner seat, and I like to ask this question, especially people that have come into ownership in the last 5 years, but were incredible at their trades for a long time, or incredible at their vertical.
Yeah.
What if someone had offered you partnership? Do you think you'd be in a different place right now?
Man, maybe. It is possible. You would have been open to that. Yeah, I would have been open to it for sure. A lot of it, though, a lot of my prior management experience, there was probably really only like one place that I worked where I would have even considered it. Just because the general management did a really good job of getting what they needed out of the manager, but not divulging too much information. And so you just didn't have the confidence that a partnership would work. Right.
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
But yeah, it is something I would have considered. It's something that I'm considering doing with my guys now is if I can get more buy-in out of them by letting them have a little bit of partnership within the company. And in, you know, that way as the company grows in value, their little piece grows in value as well. You know, it's a great way to retain really good guys.
Yeah. I think because, owning a sales org is a little different. It's basically like a rev share deal for all the management level people, you know?
Yeah.
And they can make as much as they want because of that rev share deal. You know, we call it commission, but at the end of the day, it's rev share. We're just making sure that our 30% is protected so we can run the company.
Right.
It was often like when my teams were doing the best, my VPs, my regionals were making more money than I was. You know what I'm saying? But I was working 20 hours a week, 25 hours a week. So that was the difference. That was the trade-off, you know? And so, and then when it came down to it and I saw the opportunity, I offered partnership, you know, to my VP that had been with me for like 10 years. But he consistently, it's funny, the first year that we really blew up, we compared, you know, I showed him my K-9 and he showed me his 1099 and it was like 50 grand off. You know, I was at like 450, he was at like 400. He was like, that's pretty awesome. You know, like
that.
And that's the way that I had it set up because I had it set up for scale, you know, but anyways, that's pretty cool. And yeah, I forgot that you said you started in 2020, not 18 months ago. So sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
Right. So I love that you, and I don't know if you call yourself this or somebody else called you this, the modern plumber. And so, it makes so much sense to me when I heard it. Go ahead.
Yeah. So what's funny is like, I've been pursuing some kind of like, you know, namesake or something like that for years and years and years. And so, I don't know, probably like 8 years ago, I started a Facebook page called The Modern Plumber. But then I had gotten discouraged from keeping like pushing it along. Somebody that I valued their opinion, somebody gave me some feedback that was like tying it to a political affiliation. And I'm like, well, I don't really want to, you know, they were basically saying when you call yourself the modern plumber, it makes it sound like it's you're leaning one way or the other politically. And it was enough. It doesn't make sense now, but it was enough at the time for me to be like, okay,
I lean into it.
Yeah, we'll change it. And so I changed it to the Plumbing Nerd, and I had this Facebook page called the Plumbing Nerd, and I didn't really know how Facebook worked at the time or anything else. And I just would share stories that customer had, you know, if a customer had this massive train set up, I would take pictures of it and share it on there. Or, you know, it was like basically my version of like Mike Rowe's Dirty Jobs, where any part of the job that was interesting, I was sharing it, whether it was the people or whether it was the place or anything like that. And that just kind of died along the way. Now everything gets run through like our YouTube channel and stuff like that. So
tell me about this YouTube channel, because you've gained some serious action on it. I mean, you've got 10,000 subscribers.
Yeah.
And only 121 videos. And just to provide some context to the listeners, I've got over 300 videos on YouTube and maybe 150 subscribers.
Yeah.
Because YouTube is just somewhere we post the podcast, you know, versus Mitch is intentionally investing in YouTube. You can see this one video right here has 460,000 views. How to build a potato launcher. Like, where did this, these crazy skills with YouTube come from?
Yeah. So, two and a half years ago, I had the idea that static posts on social media and static pictures are kind of going on the wayside. And so I took a risk and I hired a full-time on-staff videographer. And the idea at the time, the idea was we would create like a vlog where it was like, hey, you're just going to follow me around. We're going to film stuff. We're going to put it on YouTube and we're going to give everybody a good idea of like what it's like to, you know, grow and start a plumbing company from scratch. And so we were doing a little bit of that. And then we started realizing, okay, it's kind of boring to learn about that. So we got a little creative and we started coming up with a bunch of plumbing related videos that we could put out. And some of them are humorous, like this potato luncheon video. That was actually pretty funny. That little shot there.
That's fantastic.
That dude put it in a dumpster 150 yards away. He landed it in the dumpster. It was kind of fun.
Wow.
But yeah. Those are my old shop neighbors. But you know, we just started doing anything we could to, you know, create some fun buzz on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And now the YouTube has evolved into it assists the business really well. It adds brand authority. It adds it's a good layer of branding. But like that video that has the 400 and something thousand views, that video is like an hour long or a half hour. I mean, it's not a short video. Like it's one thing to have like a Facebook reel or a YouTube short 400,000 views. It's 4 seconds long. You know, that video's got some serious length to it and it's really value packed, but I'm kind of geeking out here. That is single-handedly the best video on the internet to explain thermal expansion and why people need a thermal expansion tank. And we were very purposeful when we did that video. We wanted it to play well to homeowners that are questioning why their plumber's telling them they need that. But we also wanted it to be done in a way to where if you are a plumbing instructor and it came time to teach thermal expansion, you could have the day off and you could just click play on that video and your entire class would learn about thermal expansion. Wow. And so the other cool things with YouTube and how it links to your website, if you go to Google right now and you type, if you Google video search, do I need a thermal expansion tank? Our video pops up first. If you Google video search, what toilet should I buy? We have another video where we went to Home Depot and we bought all these toilets and put them through all these tests. And so our video pops up there too. So the website guys love it because they can now connect the YouTube videos to our website and it really helps our SEO and everything else in those regards. So it's pretty cool how it all connects together.
That's fantastic. You know, we will spend so much money on SEO and getting to the top of SEO through blogs and all these other things and kind of these manual practices when you could just build a potato launcher gun and you'll be at the top of Google.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's freaking awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty wild. And it's also really cool to see, like, you know, we gain anywhere from like 20 to 40 subscribers a day. We're really only putting out a video like every week or every other week. It's nothing crazy. It's not a crazy film schedule or anything like that. We're just filming stuff as it comes along. And I don't want to act like it's easy. I mean, I've had to pay a full-time on-staff videographer for 2.5 years to get to that point. And if all you were relying on is YouTube revenue from their ad revenue, it's not enough. Right. I mean, we average 100,000 plays a month. We average about 10,000 watch hours a month. And we have a really good CPM and RPM, which are YouTube terms for how much they're paying you per, you know, how much advertisers are paying for 1,000 impressions and how much you're receiving for 1,000 impressions. We have industry leading CPMs and RPMs, but it still only pays us about $800 a month, $800 to $1,000 a month in YouTube revenue. Well, that's nowhere near as much as what I'm paying my videographer. And so you've got to find other ways to get mileage out of it. And so, you know, connecting it to the website helps out a ton.
No, it's definitely fantastic for sure. Do you like the long-term play with YouTube? Does it kind of go outside the business? Do you feel like, I mean, I feel like when you can capture this kind of attention on YouTube, you know, there's more that you can do with it, maybe even to TV or to Netflix or, you know, that type of deal. Have you entertained any of that?
Yeah. So a lot of that has kind of, you know, I grew up in the era of like reality TV. Mm-hmm. And I was always fascinated of like, what makes these people so interesting? Like Orange County Choppers. Why are they so interesting? Well, they fight all the time and they rip doors off. Well, that's not me.
Yeah.
But they found a way to capture the attention of people, right? Mm-hmm. And then you got all these other reality TV things, and it's like all drama and drama and drama and all that stuff. And I'm like, well, that's not, I'm not a fighter. I'm not going to argue with people or anything else. And so I'm like, let's capture their attention, but let's do it in a different way. And I happen to just know a whole lot about plumbing. And so it's one of those things where it's like, let's just start sharing all of that knowledge out on YouTube and helping better the plumbing community. But also the other plays with YouTube were, as a local plumbing company, I can only make money if your toilet needs repaired in my service area. You got a whole world of potential customers out there, and I'm working with like a 20-mile radius, right? And so the idea with YouTube was like, let's try to make some national or global income from YouTube. And so it is a long-term play for sure, 2.5 years and 10,000 subscribers. But right now we make on average, $1,000 to $1,500 a month with some other different affiliate deals and everything else that go along with that. So, and then other perks of having the full-time videographer is he also films our podcast that we do, and that's launched right into our coaching program that you just spoke at and all of that stuff. So the lateral perks that have come from having a videographer have been amazing.
Yeah. Up until about a year ago, I had a full-time person on staff that would follow me everywhere. And it's funny. He was utilized in the same ways. He would, produce the podcast. And so he pushed all the buttons throughout the podcast. All I had to do was show up and record, which spawned another idea, which was podcast partners. And the same deal, there were so many times where I'm like, hey, I need to shoot something real quick, you know? And he worked right next to me. So it was super easy just to grab him and he'd pull out the phone. You know, a lot of times you can just pull out your phone. You don't need the big camera and everything, but obviously for your YouTube videos, you got a lot of quality going into that. So one of the things that's always intrigued me is the type of growth that someone has, right? And when you look at the way that you're growing on YouTube, and you said it's 2.5 years now, it's not just this like, you're not playing YouTube algorithms necessarily to a T every time and having this kind of flash in the pan growth. You know, we see it on social media all the time. People will pay for likes and they'll do what's trendy.
Yeah.
You're kind of focusing on your niche, your expertise and your style, which in my opinion, I do the same thing on social media. I don't have a ton of followers. I think I'm at like 2,100 on Instagram or something like that. Right.
Right.
And then Facebook is where I have a lot, 'cause that's where I share the family stuff, you know, but anyways, I'm of the mindset that my following is going to be a lot deeper and more sticky, that if I'm authentic and not just trying to grab views and likes and stuff like that. And looking at your channel, it looks like you, you know what I mean? It's not this polished version or anything like that. You're in there in a t-shirt explaining what a expansion thermal take can do for your home. So it just, it makes a ton of sense. Is that, have you been tempted to grab some of those like flash in the pan successes?
So we've had a couple of videos like shorts and reels and stuff like that get, you know, millions of views.
Right.
And at the end of it, it's kind of exciting while it's happening. Like virality is kind of a neat thing to watch.
Yeah.
You know, you check in with it and it's got 600,000 views, and then you check in an hour and a half later and now it's got 750,000 views, you know, and you're just watching the view rate climb and everything else. But then at the end of it, like virality comes in a wave and then it dies off, you know? And at the end of it, it's like, okay, cool. We got like 1.8 million views on a little video. What'd it get us?
No,
nothing, you know? And so for me, it hasn't been more about like the popularity. It's more like the level of impact we can have with it. And so, we try to, every video we do, we try to answer questions in a way that have actually an impact. And so like, if you were to look at, and I'm the same way on my social medias too. I think a lot of people have like that race to 5,000 friends and they can't wait to, make that post of like, oh, I've got to clear some room on my friends list. And they think that's like a noble thing to be at that level. And, I turn away more friend requests or leave them as followers than I do accept the friend requests, just because I want an engaged following. I don't want 5,000 friends and then I go make a post and it gets 4 likes. You know, I'd rather have 2,000 friends and I go make a post and it gets 180 likes. That's what tells you how engaged your following is.
No, that's real. And it also, it's like, for me, posting on social media is like the perfect copywriters or writers like gauge, I guess.
Right.
Like, you know, right away, no matter what you try to say, algorithm, any of that stuff, I know when I made a crappy post and when I made a good one. You know what I mean? Yep. Because the good ones usually have 3 figures in the likes column. Yeah. And it's they draw people that have been kind of lurking in the shadows. They draw them out and all of a sudden they're liking your post again and stuff like that. So
yeah,
that's definitely an effect it has.
Yeah. And as we're learning about YouTube stuff, YouTube plays a lot with the algorithms of social media because it's very similar. And basically there's more content out there than anybody could actually watch. And so those companies have to be very careful about who they're putting in view of it. And so a rule that we always have for ourselves is if a video or a post or anything doesn't do well, most people try to blame the algorithm. Well, the algorithm didn't like it, or the algorithm didn't pick it up, or whatever the case may be. And I always replace the word algorithm with viewer. Like, the viewer didn't like it. The viewers didn't pick it up. And, some of that comes down to some basic fundamentals of social media and YouTube. Like if you make a post at midnight, it's not going to do well because most of your following is asleep. Yeah. And the algorithm does need to see some activity on that post within a few minutes of you posting it. Well, if everyone's asleep, that post is going to die. So like, the time that you make posts does make a difference, but also the quality of what you're putting in the post can make a difference too. And unfortunately, a lot of people just use social media like a sounding board, like a, complaining about this and complaining about that. And nobody wants to engage with that. And so if you can string together some lessons and talk about some experiences, it really helps.
Yeah. Somewhere in between long form and short form and like being a little vulnerable throughout, like, hey, I made this mistake, or this is why I don't do this anymore.
Yeah.
It hits every time because you're being a human being,
Yeah.
And so I think that's a big part of it. Okay. So, one of the things that you said in your bio is you're a small business mentor. And I would imagine this has directly to do with Tradewinds.
Mm-hmm.
And what inspired you to create that group? And how has it impacted your business? How has it impacted your life? Would love to hear more about it.
Yeah. So we kind of did things backwards. A lot of people come up with a business idea and then they start writing a podcast or a social media channel or something else to gather attention and then point it at the business. And that's probably the right way to do it. That's not the way we did it. because I had held off so long, I was 38 when I started our business, and I had been a master plumber for like, 10 or 12 years prior to starting our business. And so, really at the time I started my business, I had all of these fears and all of these everythings from those previous owners that are like, oh, you don't want to do this. Oh, this is bad. And it's so risky and everything else. So when I started my business, I borrowed $30,000 from myself, and put it into the business. And then we ended up paying that $30,000 back in 3 months. And it's like, wow, that was a lot easier than I thought. And then like month 7 or 8 into business, I'm already buying truck number 2. And 7 or 8 months in business, you don't have credit. And so this is with cash.
Right.
And this is during COVID when the pricing of vehicles is starting to soar. Well, then like 2 months later, I bought another van and I still didn't have plumber number 2 to run van number 2. And I'm already buying van number 3. And because I knew where I was going and I knew I was going to need these, and I was watching the prices climb, and I didn't want to lose out on the opportunity, you know? And so after all of that happened and we very quickly got to three trucks with inside, you know, inside of a year, I'm like, other people need to, I need to share this information with other people. And so I wrote a book, and the book was How to Start a Home Service Company. And I wrote it. I'm not a very good writer. I tabled the book, never published it, never anything. It's still sitting here in my computer.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah. Never published it. Never anything.
I was like, I have not seen this book, Mitch. I would have known about this book.
Yeah. And so then I got the realization that, like, okay, the people that would benefit from reading this probably don't read books at this point in their career. A lot of tradesmen aren't book readers yet. They don't really become book readers until they become leaders in their industry or business owners or whatever. And so that's when I thought, well, let's convert the book to a podcast. And so we started this podcast called The Void. And basically the first 9 episodes of the podcast are me reading the book. And it's with my my business partner, David, that you met over the weekend. It's with him, and so I get some feedback from him and we get some conversation going and everything else. And so the podcast still goes on today. We're a couple hundred episodes, or, you know, I think we've got like 130 or something episodes. We do an episode a week and each episode's over an hour long. We go deep diving into this stuff, but we were getting so much engagement from the podcast and so many questions and everything else that we were like, hey, it's obvious these people want more. And so about a year ago, we started Tradewinds, and we teased it out just a little bit up front, like, hey, we're putting this together. If you want on the list for when we have, you know, actual launch info this to work from, let us know. And we started right out of the gate with, you know, 10 or 12 members. It was enough to kind of get the foundation rolling and everything else. And now we're, you know, now we're making big differences in these guys' lives and in their customers' lives and in their communities and everything else, just by helping them fail faster. You know, they're bringing problems that everybody's had, but they just, and they're good. It's not, you know, you'll understand this. You come to a crossroads in business and you can see two paths that work. It's nice to have a sounding board to say, which way should I go? And you're going to get advice on which way to go, you know? And it's really cool. All of our guys are seeing a significant return on their investment and everything.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fantastic.
So, yeah.
And it's awesome that you're having that kind of impact. And, you know, you obviously know, but I don't think enough people understand why we do things like that, create the group or get the business owners together. You know what I'm saying? I'm part of a bunch of different groups. One of them is a local networking group, right? And I'm the president for the group. It works off of not a franchise model, but they have a model. It's a national model, right? And so you launch a local chapter and you run it like you're supposed to.
Yeah.
But that sounding board is everything. You know, when you go to these events and stuff like that, like you and I go to, everybody always says the breakout groups are the best things.
100%.
You know, because they're small enough where you have a voice, you know what I mean? But they're big enough to where you can get 3 or 4 different viewpoints. And, you know, it's crazy. Sometimes my wife will ask me, like, hey, what are you going to do about this problem in your business? You know?
Right.
And in telling her about the problem, I'll start working through the problem out loud. And then I'll have a solution by the end of our conversation and she won't have to say a word.
Yep.
So just saying it out loud sometimes and having someone in front of you that understands, hey, he's getting through this right now. Let me just let the man run, you know,
right.
is probably worth its weight in gold. Now, I'm sure the guys do that to themselves all the time. They come to ask you a problem. They're like, well, I could do this, this, and this, but I really want to do this. And I know if I do that, then that'll probably be the best solution. And you're like, my job's done. I didn't even have to say anything.
Yeah. And sometimes it is that easy. And really what it is the guy is not comfortable having that conversation around anybody else. And mainly because nobody else would understand, right? And I'm not knocking them, but like, if you're an employee at a fast food restaurant, you know, a trades-based business owner isn't going to be talking about their business problems to you. And
right.
And so, you know, and if you're a trades-based business owner, but none of your friends own their own business, then then you're going to have a hard time confiding in your friends about all of the issues you have going on, payroll or taxes, or, you know, do I pay cash for a vehicle, or do I finance it, or do I lease it? And what the heck is accelerated depreciation, and, you know, all of those things. And so it really changes the game on who you can talk to and what you talk about, you know, mm-hmm. when you're having those conversations.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, that's why we joined the groups that we joined. But it's weird. It, you know, for me, and I don't know if this happened to you when you first joined Apex or not, but when I first joined, I was like, oh my gosh, other people like me exist. You know, they have all these same problems I do, you know? And so it was like this this friend group of misfits, you know what I mean, that the world didn't understand, right? And then it was like, hey, let me do all the things with my friends. So I signed up for all the trips, you know, the highest levels of VIP and all this stuff, and spent just ridiculous money that I could never turn ROI on because I didn't have time because I was doing all the things, right? And now I'm in this place where I've obviously rubber banded back from that. And now everything that I do is intentional, you know, and I make sure that I'm spending 90% of my time in my business and not at the events and everything. Did you kind of go through that too?
Yeah, a little bit. I never went overboard on the event stuff. Mm-hmm. I stuck to one organization, and that was Apex.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of those people will join multiple organizations and everything else. And I've never really understood that, because you're getting so much advice poured into you. Like, how the heck do you have time to implement all of that?
Yeah.
And so I just stuck to the one organization. Their meetings were often enough where it wasn't overload or anything else, but I still was not as intentional as I am right now. I've kind of done the same thing. You know, you kind of catch yourself going to some of those events just for the rah-rah, for the motivation piece of it. And it's like, man, I can get rah-rah on a podcast or YouTube, or, I mean, heck, I can find a couple of movies that'll get you motivated. Like it's not necessarily that. It's like, okay, let's get tactical with it. Let's find out how to increase our net profit by 3 percentage points. Let's find out, you know, what we can do to mitigate tax here or tax there. Mm-hmm. Or how can we increase our sales? And so now it's very, very intentional. And like this year, the only events I'm going to this year are going to be ones that align with the two purposes that I have, you know, this year. And so that really helps decide, because you're always being peppered with event opportunities here and there. Watch this guy speak, you know, and it's, if you don't watch out, you can catch yourself spending more time at the events than you do your own business.
100%. I was definitely a victim of that in the beginning. And not really a victim. I made that choice. I had just been missing out. You know, I'd been an entrepreneur for 13 years or 12 years already by the time that I found Apex. So it was like kid in the candy store, you know?
Yeah.
But anyways, so I'm kind of curious, but, you know, obviously if it gets too personal, you don't have to answer it. But what are your two purposes for the year?
So this year it is leadership and marketing. Okay. So those two things, and specifically leadership is around getting everybody bought into the vision and everybody rowing in the same direction. It's not as easy as you would think. And I make it much harder on myself because I require my guys to have so much experience before I hire them. Well, that helps on the plumbing aspect of things, but it also, they show up with habits that don't align. I'm not going to call them bad habits, but they just don't align with the way that we do things or the viewpoint that we have and all of that. And another problem in the trades industries is there are owners out there that are very unfair to their team. There's owners out there that steal money from their employees by underpaying them and just seeing who gets caught and, you know, all of those kinds of things. And so, unfortunately, when those guys come onto your team, there's a layer of trust that they don't have initially. And it takes a really, really long time to build that. And so getting the whole team rowing in the right direction is object number one. And then object number two is marketing. I want to have a sellable company. It doesn't mean I necessarily want to sell, but I want to be in a sellable position at all times. And so I was fortunate enough a couple of weeks ago to have a meeting with a private equity firm, basically about like, what do you guys look for when you're buying companies? And by no means are we able, like, we're not eligible to sell or anything right now. We're way too small for anybody to buy us. We do great stuff. Yeah, we do great stuff, but most private equity firms want to see about $1 million in EBITDA before they before they start, you know, looking at making all the investments. And so the whole conversation was centered around exactly what they look for. And one of the things that they look for is all marketing done in-house with no reliance on outside agencies. And they said, you, it doesn't mean you can't use outside agencies, but it all needs to be directed from in-house. You need to have an in-house marketing person that calls the shots on all of that. And then if they happen to piecemeal just a little piece of this off, you know, digital TV, we're going to go to an outside agency for that or whatever. They're still calling all the shots internally. And so that's been a big change for me as we're, examining all of this. I, you know, about this time last year, I had everything outsourced in my marketing and I was getting really screwed over in the marketing area for what I was spending and what I was getting. It was nowhere near worth it. And so now we're transitioning to everything in-house and it slows the growth, but it makes it a healthier growth.
You know, you touched on a sore spot for entrepreneurs is in the marketing space. And I think it's because a lot of these marketing solutions are so front loaded with costs that it's going to take you a year and a half just to get your money back on those costs, you know? And it's a tough situation to be in, so much so that I've learned how to build a CRM and I've started doing that for my clients. I don't enjoy it at all.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm lucky that I have an overseas team that has been with me for 2+ years. And I have slowly taught small things here and there, and I'm able to outsource some of it. But it's hard for me to send my clients somewhere when it comes to marketing, because so many of the costs are inflated. And it's so hard to, especially in a business like yours, where you're looking at, I think you're right around $50 a lead, I think is what you said at the conference.
Yeah. In some areas we're $50 a lead. In areas that I'm struggling in, we're $200 or $300 a lead. Wow. And, and so obviously we have to pull back on those and reevaluate and change gears. And then the ones where we're $50 a lead, I'm kind of doubling down on those, to try to get more of those.
Yeah. So if you buy a CRM or, you know, a website combo, you know, whatever you want to call it, that's 15 grand. It's you 300 leads to even, and you're not even break even because you still got to pay for the lead.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So you're really just paying to nurture it and to create a cleaner customer experience on the way in. But anyways, that's just a sore spot for me right now in the space, because there's a lot of inflated systems out there. And so,
Well, and I think too, there's a lot of bad marketing companies out there. You know, I experienced one a year ago, and, and there's these marketing companies that they make all these promises up front, and then they know they can't deliver on them, but they, another promise they give you up front is that it takes 6 to 9 months to start to see results. And so they know that they can bring you in and start charging their monthly fees for 6 to 9 months, and they don't have to deliver results. And then they don't, I've seen this too many times where about the 6 to 9 month point, guys are saying, I'm not seeing results. And then all of a sudden, like a light switch, here come the leads. And it just seems like the marketing companies are just stringing you along and putting in as little work as possible. And then they're turning the few switches that they can turn right about the time you're wanting to leave, you know? And I caught
that
mine.
Reduces their margins.
Yeah.
That reduces their margins when they send you leads.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Once they actually start paying for those leads that you're paying them for, now it cuts into their margins. And so, you know, the former marketing agency that I had, part of their package, they included LSA, Google LSA for free. They'll run your LSA for free if you do all of these other things, and you just tell them how much you want to spend. And so I told them, let's spend $2,000 a month on Google LSA. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, this was, again, I know this now, this was a marketing agency where I don't get logins to any of my stuff. And so I couldn't double check. I couldn't verify. And I'm just assuming they're doing everything they can. Well, after things went south, I was able to log into my LSA account, and they had never once spent more than $800 on Google LSA, but they were charging me $2,000 every month. Most months they were spending between $400 and $600. And so there would be times where I'm like, hey, this seems to be working really well. Can we pull funds from here and put them into here? And they would always tell me, we're using your budget everywhere. So if you want to dive harder into an area, we need more money. And it's, and then when the veil comes down at the end and it's like, man, there was over $1,000 every month that you were just pocketing and telling me, I mean, it's literal theft is what it was. So
that's what I was going to ask. Like, I mean, and you know, being older now, I understand the opportunity cost that goes into going after someone, you know what I mean? Sometimes it's just, you just learn your lesson, you take your lump and you move on. But I mean, that sounds like theft.
Yeah. Yeah. It was 100% theft. And then as I got into my Google Ads account, I found the president and CEO of a local competing plumbing company listed as an admin level user on my Google Ads account. And so that told me two things. One, obviously that shouldn't have ever happened. But two, the marketing agency that I was paying was also doing marketing for a local competitor. And so then it comes to like, if somebody's trying to dominate a space, well, if you have two competitors, you know, two clients in that space, who are you going to give your attention to? The one that's giving you the most money. And so we found all kinds of stuff like that. And I mean, we take our licks and we move on. I never sued them. Yeah. I did dispute my final month's payment. They extorted me for my final month's payment in order to get my passwords. And so I paid them the final month. I got all my passwords. I got all my logins. I got them booted off of those accounts. And then I disputed the charge and we won that dispute. So, and of course they call up and they were like, well, anything we can do? And I'm like, yeah, if you call again, you might get sued. Like,
exactly.
Consider yourself lucky that all I did was dispute the last month.
Yeah. Now that precautionary tale for sure. You know, if you're in the trades and you're looking at, you got to know who you're marketing with. I mean, you got to know who you're outsourcing to. And this is, I was on Garrett. I can't remember his last name now. You know, I'm going to feel bad about this one because he invited me to speak at his event. He's got a trades network also,
yeah,
you know, where he coaches a lot of tradesmen, and he had an event coming up that he had to cancel, but anyways, he had me in his network to speak to his network, and he asked, well, if someone's thinking about hiring you, like, what questions should they ask themselves, you know? Which I love the question. I've never been asked that question so much before or before at all. And the question was like, have you even tried to do it yourself?
Right.
You know, and that's a big part of it, because the people that have put together their sales programs, or, you know, have a script or started to put together a comp plan, you know, they're, by the time that I come in, I'm able to escalate what they already have, you know what I mean? And kind of light it on fire a little bit, because it came from them, and them is what was working in the first place.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And it makes it so, it makes my job so much easier at that point to, okay, well, we just need to do X, Y, and Z, and then we're ready to roll. But that's what I always encourage people to do, especially in the marketing space, because it is an easy space to screw people over. It is.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of smoke and mirrors, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, to the good marketers out there, that's not your problem. You know what I'm saying? You've got to fight against it. You know, it's just like a door-to-door sales rep. We would have to fight against people calling us a scam every time we knocked on their door. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it's the same thing. You got to fight through that. But that's what I would encourage the listeners to do, is just do it yourself first. Take a few lumps, figure stuff out. And you were talking to your guys about it too. It's like, man, if you go out and you spend $5,000 in marketing and you only get $1,000 back or $2,000 back, all right, well, that was just the first time you did it. Try it again, you know?
Yeah.
And figure it out.
Yeah.
And so that was just such a cool event to kind of see kind of behind the plumbing trade as a whole, but just that group. You have an amazing, great group, and that's a reflection of your leadership. So it makes sense that that's one of your words for 2024 for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. And I was fortunate enough that we grew at our plumbing company. We were able to do over $1 million a year with very little advertising. I think I was spending maybe $2,000 a month on all things that you would consider advertising. These shirts are advertising, right? And so that $2,000 yeah. a month is buying shirts
like
this.
It's a great shirt.
Yeah. You know, when I sponsor the Little League baseball team, that's advertising. Do I get an ROI on that? No, but yeah. it still goes in the advertising budget. And when I'm, you know, at that time we were smaller. And so we weren't spending as much on our Google presence and our search engine optimization and everything else. But, you know, that included all of that as well. And so there's just so much you can do out there on your own when you're small. There's so much you can do when you're small and on your own that helps dramatically. One of the first things that I tell people in Tradewinds to get more calls coming in is I say, go to your Google business page and set a reminder 3 days a week, like put an actual reminder in your phone or in your calendar three days a week. You need to upload a photo from that week onto your Google business page. And then just write a real quick description about it. It doesn't have to be anything fancy, nothing. Just show Google that you're staying fresh on your business page and you're giving, like, Google is a content machine. So the more content you can give Google, the more information you can give Google, the more they're going to love you. So just start getting in that habit. And then we talk about like posting on social media and stuff like that, but there's just so much you can do on your own that help out dramatically. And if you don't do it on your own, it's going to get really expensive.
Yeah. And if you're in the first couple hundred thousand of your business, you know, like you're doing 200,000, 300,000. Those are moves that can actually move the needle, but only cost your time. And let's be honest, you have the time at that point in the business, even if you have to like push your hours worked up a little bit, that needle will be moved so much, it'll be worth it. And then you can finally hire that first plumber or whatever the case is, you know, whatever trade you're in.
When we started our company, I dedicated myself 8 to 6, Monday through Saturday. I was working on the business. And so I was either running service calls or I was doing social media stuff, or I was walking through neighborhoods and hanging door flyers on those neighborhoods.
Nice.
So those were the three things that I was doing 8 to 6 Monday through Saturday, just back to back to back.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. Last question. We'll wrap this up. We've already gone over on time. Hopefully you didn't have anything right after this.
No, you're good. You're good.
Okay, good. My last question is, or questions are, what does legacy mean to you and what legacy do you want to leave behind?
Legacy to me means impact. And you can have impact in quite a few ways, but sometimes that's financial and sometimes that's just informational, right? And so literally like my motto in life is to have the biggest impact on as many people as possible. And so, you know, we do that with our customers. We do that with my family. We do that like with our Tradewinds program. We do that with our podcast, like anything I can do to add value to other people. To me, that's it. I have written down as one of my life's goals that I want something named after me in our city. And it's not a... It's not a selfish thing. It's not a, I don't know, ego thing or anything else. Like, they only name things after people that had a massive impact, right?
It's a scoreboard.
Or a massive checkbook.
Yeah.
Either which way.
But it's a scoreboard. It's like, a lot of people don't get, if you're not a business owner, that a lot of times, you know, yes, people are bragging about the gross income of their business, but that's the scoreboard, you know?
Yeah.
It really is, especially like, I mean, how many plumbers do you know that have a 7-figure business? Probably 1 to 5%, maybe, you know?
Yeah, there's not a ton. There's not a ton. And we do a community initiative program with our business where we take the first day of every month, we set it aside, and we put people on the schedule that day that can't afford plumbing repairs. And we just go take care of their plumbing absolutely free of charge. And hopefully as that thing grows, hopefully that's the catalyst to get, you know, a park or a street or something. And it didn't even have to be me. Like, that program is called the Family First Program. If they named a park the Family First Park, like, that, that's how much it's not an ego thing. It's just, I want to be a part of a big enough impact where they name something after, you know, me or my organization at some capacity.
No, I think that's huge. And you're right. It doesn't have to come from the profit side of the business. It could be from the nonprofit initiative. I mean, it could be something that comes out of your group or comes out of your family. You never know. One of your sons might become famous, and then they give him the key to the city. So
yeah, you never
it
know.
It may just be the inspiration you gave him to do something great with his life, you know?
Yeah.
And so, guys, if you get a chance, go to YouTube and definitely add another subscriber for Smedley Plumbing. I mean, I know they need it. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
follow Mitch.
We'll still take all we can get.
Yeah. I mean, I think between you and Jacob Stoller and maybe like Drewby Wilson, I get my entertainment on social media from you guys. So it's fantastic. So definitely follow them and check out the podcast too, the Void Podcast. And if they're interested in the TradeWinds group, where can they go for that?
You can go to tradewindsconsulting.com, and that's wins like winning in the trades, TradeWins. So, awesome. Yeah, it's kind of our motto is winning in the trades. So
I love it, brother. I want to thank you so much for coming on the call. This has been a great conversation, so much, probably my longest one in a while. So I appreciate you.
Good stuff.
All right, let's get building, y'all.